Good evening, everyone. You're listening to CITR Radio at 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of Intersection, CITR's bi-weekly radio show about feminism, gender empowerment, and bringing down the patriarchy, all of which in a day's work for the small but powerful team here at CITR. It is a little bittersweet for me to announce that today's episode is the last episode of the year. And the last episode for me as this year's Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator. So thank you all for joining us on this ride and for tuning in for one last time today. And I couldn't think of a better way of ending this year's episode than to talk about a topic very close to my heart, yoga and Hinduism, specifically the appropriation of yoga and the Hindu religion in Vancouver as we know it. And we have none other than the amazing Peter Elmas, who is a yoga teacher here based in BC, joining us today. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Lakshmi.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Anastasia for the very first time, Chimji and Lily on the show today. All right. Peter, so tell us a little bit about how you got started. What drew you to yoga and how long have you been in the yoga industry?
Okay. So about 15 years ago.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. I was introduced to the practice by a friend who wanted to go on a road trip, and it was going to be a longer trip, and he's going to take me with him, and he said, but every morning we're going to wake up, we're going to do yoga, so you've got to figure this out, like, let's go do some yoga. Mm-hmm. His partner just opened up a yoga studio. I did some work for him around his house, and he let me use the studio for free. Mm-hmm. I'd been, without going into too much of the background, I'd been a smoker for 10 years at this point. I was probably 24, 25. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Never really wanted, I didn't want to quit. I was mm-hmm. quite happy being a smoker. Mm-hmm. It worked. Mm-hmm. Did my first yoga class, mm-hmm. 75 minutes. She taught me how to breathe more than anything else. I walked out with half a pack of cigarettes, threw them away, and haven't smoked since.
Wow.
Right? Like, wow. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, life-changing, incredible experience. And that was, just the tip of the iceberg. It really fit a gap in my life. Mm-hmm. I grew up Roman Catholic, as you do, if things happen, I fell away from we fell away from church mm-hmm. earlier on. So the ideas of God and religion and divinity and all this stuff, I grew up with it. Mm-hmm. Stories of Jesus and his parable and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So there was a need for that. Most people, mm-hmm. a lot of people have a need for that. Like mm-hmm. it serves a purpose. And that yoga really quickly filled that for me. Mm-hmm. Within a month, this same teacher, Sylvie Gouin, introduced the idea that maybe if you were a yogi or practicing yoga, you didn't eat meat because it's not aligned with ahimsa. Mm-hmm. I'd mm-hmm. eaten meat for 20 daily, probably, for mm-hmm. 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And see how I feel, so I stopped eating meat, and I felt fine, and nothing had to die for me to be nourished. So that was a revelation. So just all this stuff, mm-hmm. and then instead of the road trip, my buddy showed up one Monday after a weekend at a yoga ashram, mm-hmm. And said, "Do you want to go to India instead?" Mm-hmm. So first yoga class,
just casually, "Do you want to go to India?"
Yeah,
why not?
And I said, "Yeah." I spent my 20s traveling, so it wasn't a big leap for me. Mm-hmm. So first class, 3 months later, I was in India mm-hmm. for the best part of 6 months mm-hmm. In Rishikesh for the first bit of it, which is the base of the Himalayas mm-hmm. where the Ganges comes out of.
Yes, the spiritual epicenter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. one of the holiest cities. Mm-hmm. And spent months there it blew me away mm-hmm. and haven't looked back. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been teaching yoga in BC for?
I moved to BC in 2010.
Okay.
So what is it, 2019?
Yeah.
9 years in BC.
Yeah. It's a long time. And I guess there's there's no way to really kind of like ease into this conversation.
You don't ease into it.
No. It's not an overstatement for me to say that yoga in Vancouver, in North America, is generally incredibly whitewashed. Mm-hmm. For our listeners, you obviously can't see us, but Peter is a white dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not South Asian.
So one of the things that I really wanted to get to in today's show is, what does it mean if the face of a South Asian practice is a white person.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of repercussions to that statement
mm-hmm.
alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious about that line between appropriation and co-opting a practice and mm-hmm. that line that on the other side lies appreciation and respectfully practicing this mm-hmm. This religious practice. Where do you think that line is? Do you think there's a line at all?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Like, I don't, like, depends what you mean by line, and if the line's straight or is it
mm-hmm.
rigid? Is it,
well,
there probably is a line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not the one who should be saying where that maybe that line is.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that?
Well, again, there's nothing offensive about it, you know, I mean, innately to me. Like, I'm not having that experience where it is co-opted from me and my people or,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't, I can't, I can imagine,
mm-hmm.
But it's hard, you know, and I can try and relate
mm-hmm.
and empathize and see it. And
mm-hmm.
I agree with, I mean, everything that you have said and probably everything you will say, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, well, let's see. but... Yeah, I don't think it's my call to make,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to make it. Like I don't want to say at the well, I don't know if I don't want to say I don't have a say
mm-hmm.
in the mainstream direction of it.
Mm-hmm.
I know how I practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawn to communities and sanghas or schools or
mm-hmm.
That have that connection very much alive
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
these, you know, I mean, the giants, the shoulders of giants that we're standing on,
mm-hmm.
I mean, are always honored, referred to. I don't have any illusions that this is mine. I'm
mm-hmm.
not creating anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not probably not doing an amazing job of, you know, I'm doing the best I can to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very quick to point back down the line.
Mm-hmm.
To where and who and what it's come from,
mm-hmm.
I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I also get, like, a lot of places, that's not happening everywhere. It's probably not happening in the majority of the places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard because especially in the yoga, I mean, in Vancouver, we've got a business
mm-hmm.
and the teachers are contractors.
Right.
So the way the business is run and these environments aren't necessarily always reflective of the teacher, what the teacher really want or would do
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird
mm-hmm.
realm of,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, okay, well, I need a job because Vancouver's crazy expensive
hard
to live in
yeah.
or whatever, you know, I mean, whatever. And I love this yoga, I mean, dropped this habit that everyone struggles with their whole life,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, and got me to a place where I'm living at peace with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these benefits, and everyone's having these kind of experiences,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they go back to their, you know, I mean, whatever their culture, their society, their,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the way we've built it, and it doesn't always compute, it doesn't always align,
mm-hmm.
and so what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, see, there are several aspects
mm-hmm.
To this. There's obviously like the commercialization, the commodification,
mm-hmm.
the lack of education in yoga,
mm-hmm.
and it all comes down to ownership, who's making money off this,
mm-hmm.
right? And the reason I asked you that earlier where the line is, because to me, if, for example, when I looked at your Instagram page, which is, I think, that's your most active social media
yeah,
site.
Yeah,
begrudgingly. And it's clear that you treat this more than just a physical practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about getting fit and getting a, can you get a six pack with yoga? I don't know. But, you
yeah.
know, it's not.
the way a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point for a lot of people. Sure.
Right. So it's not just about the physical practice. And the reason I'm asking this is, I guess it would make more sense if I said that when I first came to Canada
mm-hmm.
And the very first yoga class I took. Now, this is me. I'm an Indian. I'm
mm-hmm.
Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, my first experience with yoga was with my mother and my grandfather. My mother taught me and then her father taught her.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, I think I do have a more purist view of what yoga should be practiced like, which
mm-hmm.
is not to say I think that's how it should be practiced. So the first time I had a class in North America, in Canada, it was in Toronto, and I go to this yoga class, and I'm the only brown person there, which is already a little weird,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, whatever. I'm not in India anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it became very quickly apparent to me that a lot of the words that they were using in class, the way they chose to end the class with namaste,
mm-hmm.
none of that made sense to me. I didn't understand why we were ending the class with what was essentially a greeting in all of India.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
I was reading about that last week.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And also a lot of that, you know, like downward dog or cobra pose was all strange to me because I knew them by different names. Mm-hmm. And of course, I understand why you would use that. It's not easy to pronounce and you want to make this accessible to people. We're talking about inclusivity. Mm-hmm. But this is where it's kind of ironic to me. One of the biggest selling points of yoga in the West is just about that, right? It's about acceptance. It's about being as inclusive as possible and welcoming people. And I thought to myself, here I am in a room practicing what is essentially my culture and feeling more alienated and awkward and excluded than ever. Because none of the people looked like, at least that class, they had no idea what those words meant. And there was a huge picture of like Lord Ganesh on the wall. And it was just, I could tell there was no real like, it was not kind of put up there with some level of like sanctity or like respect. It was just kind of there because, hey, it's a yoga class. So, you know, we put up some exotic pictures of Hindu gods. So, and the reason I asked you that, this all brings me back to the original question. The reason I asked you this is because I can tell you're someone who takes this more than just a physical practice. And in your when you're teaching these classes, is that something that's come up to you? Is it important that the people who come to your class know the context of this practice, know the words they're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is.
Do you end the class with namaste?
I do.
Shame.
And here's the thing. So I do, and I'm for me, yoga is an inquiry. Like I'm a student. I'm not. I mean, you bring, like I'm here as a yoga teacher. I'm here like to represent. I'm you know, I mean, I've been teaching for over 10 years, but I'm a junior teacher. I consider myself a really good student and a learner. Like I'm trying to figure this out. So along the way, like I've you know, even just saying chakra instead of chakra, even just the nuances of the pronunciation of the words, I think the words themselves and the phrases and the terms, you want to honor them and where they come from by using them correctly and pronouncing properly, but there's also great lessons in a lot of these names. There's stories. In Matsyendrasana, the story of Matsyendra, like all these things, and the Virabhadrasana, the warrior poses, and the stories of Shiva, and there's lessons in there, and teachings in there that have profoundly affected my life. So I want to honor them. So learning, I mean, figuring it out, and then the namaste thing is interesting. I have been recently. I know, like I spent a year in India. Like I know that it's a greeting. Namaste, namaskar. And this like big flowery definition they've put around it.
Yeah,
like
really flopped out version of I'm bowing down to the divine within you.
But yeah. I mean,
maybe if you go really far back, maybe that's what it means if you break down the Sanskrit syllables. But like for the most part in India, when people are saying namaste, it's kind of like a hey, what's up, man?
It's hey, what's up.
Yeah, so if you're ending a class with like, guys, put your, you know, palms together and just hey,
guys,
what's up.
Hey, what's up.
For me, there was an article, I can't remember, I probably should be able to refer to this stuff. There, I was reading something last week, and doing the question myself, and I've considered dropping it, and then I just like this is last week. I considered not saying it, and it still came out because I mean it still happened. It's just it's like okay, it's my comfort zone, I guess.
It's a habit. It's okay.
But to me, so where it is to me is mine is like a nice way of turning it to English for me is like I see you or I bow to you, like you know, it's a greeting. And yes, it should come up front, like it should be said at the beginning.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I'm in the process of not saying it at the end of my class anymore. Which is wonderful. And talking about those things, we chant at the beginning and it's keep it simple and keep it to om. And I do, I mean, some classes I'll talk about what that means and what the effect. And if you do workshops with me or like longer than the 60 or 75, 90 minute class, I'll try and get into that stuff more and more and more.
Yeah.
And it's educating people. It's a vehicle to expose them to this stuff. So I try and I'm more than happy to be corrected.
Right.
And be wrong and learn and grow and do better. I do my best until I know better, and then I do better.
Right. And the reason I point that out, it's not that I specifically have a problem with that one word, namaste. I'm not like picking at it. It's just more so. It's just like one side of what I think Eastern spirituality has become.
A very obvious example of people not knowing what the fuck they're talking about.
Even outside like the yoga studio, I mean, especially Vancouver is famous for it. I mean, there I've seen quite a few coffee shops where and I was telling my team about this earlier, who are eerily silent for some reason.
We were talking about how in coffee shops or like even like bars or even like weed dispensaries, you have like little Buddha heads there,
and or even Lord Ganesh.
They're for like tip jars, and like you don't really do that with other religions, you know.
Yeah. You don't. I guess you don't have a Jesus up.
And that's what my problem is. It's like, when did yoga or like Hinduism become so okay to like? I think it's great. That's one of the things I love about my religion is like how accepting it is and how okay it is to be like poked at. But I'm just curious, like who becomes the voice of authority on this? Like, I'm certainly no like Vedic scholar. Like, everything I speak is just based on my limited, admittedly limited experience. But when did yoga or any aspect of Hinduism become so easy to modify? Because I get a lot of people saying, well, yoga's all about acceptance. And I think it's kind of ironic that the best thing about it is now being used against it. Like, because it's so accepting, we can do whatever we want with it.
I've never seen the word or translated from any Sanskrit word acceptance within the teaching. I think there's a whole other realm. It's interesting. I think there's ways to honor. Like, of course, we can have a Buddha's head up, but you don't put the deity on the ground. You don't, you know, I mean, you don't point your feet at the deity. Mm-hmm. Like, I spent enough time in temples and ashrams in India. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't put your. So I actually have it with me. I have this wonderful piece of fabric that's got Shiva on it, Shiva and Parvati, and it says Om Namah Shivaya on it. And I mean, you've seen them. Mm-hmm. I got it in Rishikesh, and I had it wrapped around my waist. Mm-hmm. And some older Indian gentleman came up to me at the ashram and he said, young man.
Even right now, as you were saying it, I was like, oh.
Oh, I know. Thankfully, this day one, I learned really quickly. It actually turned my white pants yellow, so I'm glad he taught me. But
more practically speaking.
But he said, this is God. You don't wrap him around your butt.
Yeah.
Right? You put him, and he took it, he came up, like, he came right, took it off me, wrapped it around my neck, put it around my shoulders, and said, this is where you put Shiva.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God I learned that, because I would have, I mean, because he was, so all this stuff is really important. Yeah. And I even, at one of the places I teach, there's an altar, Nataraja's on it, and so is Ganesha, and the teachers, Krishnamacharya and Iyengar, and the seat of the teacher is in front of the altar, so you have to turn your back on them. Mm-hmm. And I've been teaching there for years, and I never feel comfortable. And not uncomfortable enough to sit on the other side of the room or to turn around away from the students, but it's just the configuration of the room. But even if I had my way, I would tell people, like, don't point your feet. Yeah. Don't put the holy books on the ground.
Yes, yes.
All these things.
Yeah, like don't tattoo Om on your feet.
Don't put it on your feet.
Or like near your butt.
Or near, you know what I mean, don't have it on your butt cheek.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, right. And that's the, Peter just showed me a tattoo of Om on his hand. What is it?
Om Namah Shivaya.
Right, right, right.
So Shiva.
And this is, and oh, I noticed you're wearing Rudraksha there.
I'm wearing Rudraksha.
Lovely. So, I mean, that's the thing about Vancouver. I'm sure all of you guys have seen this. It's, Vancouver's like this weird mishmash of like every single, like, I don't know where crystals are from. I have no idea what practice that's from. But you see, like, these little, like, I think this was this Hollister? They had, like, an indigenous, like, spirituality starter kit.
Oh, they have tribal prints, too.
Oh, I mean, they use,
like you mix up yoga with crystals, with sage, with just all these unrelated elements of spirituality. I mean, this is a free country. You can do whatever you want. I can't stop you from, like, tattooing Lord Shiva on your butt. Like, as much as I'd be very upset if you did that, I can't stop you. It is a free country. But, like, I think it's so important to have people like you, Peter, on this here having this conversation, because there are definitely teachers who find this kind of appropriative aspect of yoga problematic. But I think if we don't actually translate that into actual education and change when you are teaching in yoga classes, then all it's going to be is just a bunch of people like me just kind of yelling into the void, like, this is not okay, but we're not actually making any, like, change on the ground.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So if you could, so it, it,
What was the question? That was just a rant.
But I want to know what you would yell into the void. Like, because there are... there's an education element. Like, people don't know.
Yeah.
People don't know. And you're in Vancouver.
Yeah. And there's also beer yoga. There's like...
Oh, I know that.
Rave yoga.
And the vino and vinyasa. Like, I have friends that do it.
Oh, my God. Vino and
vinyasa. But you do the yoga class, and then you have a nice class. And then as a sort of... Mm-hmm. Get together and group bonding. You have a glass of wine, and it's just sort of. I've never been to an event like that. I often get judgmental, and when I see yoga events that serve alcohol, like all this stuff, but at the same time, I mean, my Swami Govindananda is a wonderful Indian Swami, sannyas, great teacher. I spent a bit of time with him. Mm-hmm. And he'd do question and answer sessions with the people, the tourists that came to the ashram. Mm-hmm. And he always got asked about sex. Mm-hmm. Like, don't you want to have sex? Like, you've never had sex. Have you ever had sex? Do you think about sex? Mm-hmm. And he was asked about Bikram yoga. He's like, well, what do you think about Bikram yoga? Mm-hmm. And
Bikram yoga is the hot yoga, right?
It's the hot yoga.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he said, well, whatever gets people to yoga. It gets people in the door. Mm-hmm. You have a trend. I mean, hopefully, and mm-hmm. I really believe like it's, all these practices are so powerful. Even just being in the presence of someone who's had these experiences, hopefully they go like, what? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, okay. And then they hear the Sanskrit, mm-hmm. or they chant the Om, and the Om feel the ants. They don't know what the fuck they're saying, but it feels good.
Yeah.
So why
it
does it feel good?
Wakes up something in them.
Right, and then it filters people like you sort of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get deeper into it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're getting what you need. Hopefully you get your medicine
from it
and your life's enriched and, I mean, whatever the benefits are.
Yeah, because I feel like that's kind of like a sad part about it is that there's a whole part of yoga as it's, like, recreationalized and, like, commodified that's, mm-hmm. like, being missed. Like, the whole section of, like, the spirituality of it and, like, the opportunities to learn from it are kind of like lost in just the like this is a workout. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering like do a lot of your students like show an interest in learning the actual historical significance and like the spiritual significance?
I've never been asked about the historical significance. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. In sort of that drop-in group class environment, it doesn't come up. People usually want to know how to do a better. Mm-hmm. Upward facing dog. Which is usually the line of question. But you sort of filter it down, and then you do the workshop on the weekend. And my last series has been centered around the Yoga Sutras. Mm-hmm. So the eight limbs of yoga, mm-hmm. the yamas and the yamas. You come across all these words, mm-hmm. And you talk about their meanings and what they actually like, how they are translated, and the teachings behind the way they're, as opposed to. So the questions come up in those kind of environments, but then you're also getting the 12 to 25 people as opposed to the, some of you, for example, from 60 down to 20 that are really interested, down to 10 that I mean might stay afterwards and ask you a question about it, down to the one or two that I work with one-on-one, and then maybe the one that goes to India.
Right, right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. You know, let's just take a quick break and we will be right back with Peter Elmas and yoga and appropriation. Stay tuned, guys.
It's time to unlock the bathroom door and talk about Crohn's and colitis. They're lifelong diseases. They're on the rise among children under 10, and they involve severe abdominal pain, chronic diarrhea, and for many people, life-altering surgery. They're mired in secrecy and embarrassment, ignorance and fear, which only adds to the pain. It's time to make it stop. Crohn's and colitis. Make it stop for life. Visit crohnsandcolitis.ca.
What is disability insurance? 1 out of 10 Canadians wouldn't know how to answer this question. What's more troubling is that 3 out of 4 Canadians say that being unable to work for 3 months due to a disability would severely impact their personal finances. But getting covered is easier than you think. It generally only costs between 1 and 3% of your income. And insurance benefits can maintain your income as though you're still at work full time. If you are a working person, then stay safe and get covered. Statistics courtesy of RBC Insurance.
Am I wrong?
Man, they were nihilists, man.
Huh?
They kept saying they believed in nothing.
Nihilists. Greatest Date from Nihilism, Rediscovering Our Passion in Late Modernity by Dr. Gordon E. Karkner involves a journey out of the prison of contemporary nihilism and into a meaningful life trajectory. Rooted in the work of Canadian premier philosopher Charles Taylor, this book is a relevant read for students and faculty. You can find it at the UBC or Regent bookstores.
Who's the f***ing nihilist around here, you bunch of f***?
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Intersections at CITR at 101.9 FM. So we were chatting with Peter Elmas about yoga and appropriation. And Peter, just before we went for the break, you said something really interesting about your guru, about how he said all that matters is what kind of gets them through the door, right?
Yeah, he didn't have a problem with Bikram yoga per se. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He said, you mean, if people are getting introduced to these ideas, mm-hmm. these practices, mm-hmm. Ideally, hopefully, mm-hmm. And they probably have a greater chance mm-hmm. that they're going to dive a little bit deeper.
Right, right. And so here's the thing that I'm worried about mm-hmm. Or concerned about. I definitely think it's important for more people to practice yoga or meditation. I think it's such a powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And I think in this day and age, like, God knows we really need it, mm-hmm. given how stressed and just high strung everyone has become. Mm-hmm. So here's a little story. So I was in India last year, in Hyderabad, and I was just walking down the street, and there was this huge billboard, so this like huge sign. It was just an advertisement for a yoga studio. Okay, and again, just in case you guys didn't get that, I was in India. there's a huge sign for this yoga studio, and it featured a blonde lady doing yoga. She was like in cobra pose. If it's not already apparent why that is so problematic, if the face of yoga, even in India, is becoming a white person, mm-hmm. to me that is just, there's just something, it just rubs me the wrong way. I just think there's something very problematic about that. I do think more people should practice yoga. If everything I've said so far on the show makes it sound like I'm somehow implying that people who aren't Indian or aren't Hindu, they can't practice yoga, that's the opposite of what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. I think everyone should practice yoga. It's just that, is there any way we can reverse this whitewashing of yoga?
I was listening to a podcast earlier, and they were talking about it's probably easier to imagine the Armageddon happening, than it would be to imagine capitalism ending. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? We can't imagine, like, mm-hmm. What do you mean capitalism ending? So, you know, mm-hmm. the world will blow up. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as long as it's woven into, like, as long as it's people's careers and, mm-hmm. and people are making billions, and people, you mean, there's mm-hmm. companies, billion-dollar mm-hmm. companies mm-hmm. founded on mm-hmm. appropriating yoga.
Right, right.
And so as long as it's woven in there, it's going to be really hard. I don't know. It's not, nothing's impossible. It's going to be really hard mm-hmm. Because what sells?
Right.
Like, what are people drawing? Like, and it's just our society, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is unfortunate. So we make the efforts within it.
Right. Because if you look at the Instagram pages, and I hate to say this, but like, and I'm not going to drop names because I don't know what the repercussions of that are on the show, but there's some very, very huge popular yoga studios here in Vancouver. And if you look at their Instagram pages, you can it's just like, it's like, okay, white person, practicing white person, one black person. And you can tell she's just a token, mm-hmm. you know, diversity character, mm-hmm. white person, one brown person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even just like the commodification in general, like I just before this I was looking at one page that was like everything you need for yoga and meditation, and it was all just a page of like items that they're selling, right? Like just all these like decorative mats and like weird extra things that I don't know off the top of my head, but like just these things that all the things you need, right, for yoga and meditation. And like mm-hmm. as far as I know, like meditation is something that you do internally, like yeah. what do you need?
It's the one thing where you don't need anything. Yeah. You just need yourself mm-hmm. for it. Yeah,
yeah. And that
yeah, but then
like,
how are we gonna make money off it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and you've been to India. I mean, like, traditionally yoga was like, you just need like a loincloth and like the ground to practice. And I'm not insisting everyone that. Get like nude and start practicing it like in a loincloth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like if you look into the text and it talks mm-hmm. about taking, like, doing these practices, these specific mm-hmm. kriyas or asana, I mean, whatever, it's like subterranean without windows, so no breeze and by yourself, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's in the dirt. Like, it's mm-hmm. not, there's nothing.
Wait, not in the, you mean traditionally? Not in the breeze?
Well, yeah.
No, you're supposed to do it in open spaces.
Well, there we go. Like, I don't know. Yeah. What I've read is, I mean, the ideal space is
okay. And I think maybe talk okay, about I'm gonna. I have some books from my grandfather. I'm gonna share
yeah,
those
please,
with you.
Yes. Do. Yeah, for sure. And that's the other part is there's so many different, like, yoga's been around for
For a long time.
Well, and how do we put a number on it? Mm-hmm. Like, because then you go back more than 100 years, mm-hmm. and yoga as we know it, what we're calling yoga, didn't exist.
Right. I mean, see, this conversation is not so much about, I'm not somehow implying that when we practice yoga here, it has to be how, like, the greats practiced it thousands of years ago. That's not what I'm implying at all. I'm just saying that to talk about yoga in the West, the way mm-hmm. it is practiced, the way it's been co-opted mm-hmm. and commodified, mm-hmm. and not talk about the very obvious fact that it is rooted in systems of power dynamics and oppression and colonialism, because the migration of yoga to the West was originally because it was a way of kind of, you know, Indian people telling the British, like, hey, we're not as, like, barbaric and, like, primitive.
Yeah, exactly. Indian nationalists. He wanted to export it to the world and show everyone how great Hinduism and all these things were.
Exactly.
He did a wonderful job.
Yeah, it was a
and
way...
The capitalists saw it and said, I'm going to make some fucking money off this.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a way of showing, okay, we're not primitive. So the very fact, like, the very migration of yoga was rooted in, like, colonization and power dynamics and Eurocentrism. So to talk about yoga now without addressing any of that, especially when it is so whitewashed, and for those of you who don't know, Peter was kind of, like, looking through the Instagram of not sure which yoga studio.
We'll say which yoga
studio. To see if it's, like, representing people equally, and I'm guessing...
It represents the people that show up to classes.
Which are?
I mean, yeah, white. Yeah. Well, mostly white.
Isn't that what they say, like weird flex, but okay? Like.
Oh, yeah. And the other, I mean, there's so many different angles to this. Like, yoga has a reputation, mm-hmm. right? And it always had, Swami Vivekananda brought it across in 1893, of this, of as a vehicle to self-realization, mm-hmm. which is the end of suffering, and personal suffering. It didn't build that reputation. The efficacy of this practice wasn't built on hot yoga.
No.
Asana is a very small part of it. We have these physical vehicles that we need to keep healthy. I mean, and that's it. Like, do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Like I don't... Six-pack, like, all these things. So we're not getting the full effect mm-hmm. by just doing asana.
Right.
And that's where I want people to know more about the history of yoga. Yes, to honor the tradition, the lineages, mm-hmm. and the giants whose shoulders we stand on, but also to get this magical technology that flowered out of the Indus Valley mm-hmm. thousands of years ago, right? It's incredible, and it's the way to world peace and, you know, I mean, personal peace and love and the end to war. Like, it's just... And we've reduced it to a fucking fashion show and mm-hmm. a bikini contest. Mm-hmm. And part, like, I try not to. Like, I'm kind of, I suppress maybe, I guess, it's coming out now, the sort of annoyance with that. And mm-hmm. I have an Instagram, I have, like, social media in general. Mm-hmm. I think there's a whole, I mean, I don't know the percentages, I'll make shit up. But mm-hmm. half of it is just that. It's just people making a buck. And you can't blame them. It's where they come from. It's what they know. They've had this wonderful experience. They went to the Toronto yoga show, mm-hmm. yoga conference, and felt amazing. Their friend took them. They felt incredible. Mm-hmm. So then they turn around and they go, where's yoga? And there's yoga here. So they go to this yoga studio, mm-hmm. and that's what they know. And they go there and they feel great. So they just run with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important for us to educate.
Right.
It's important for people like yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, people that grew up with it in their living room. Mm-hmm. Like, how incredible would it be if we educated people to the point where, no, we do this as a family together at home every morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important for me mm-hmm. to carry that forward, because mm-hmm. I do see, I mean, I have a bunch of teachers that are, senior South Asian descent. Mm-hmm. They're older. When I say senior, I mean they're older. Mm-hmm. And that whole, I mean, this is really powerful mm-hmm. layer is going to pass on soon. And what are they, like, who's going to step up and take mm-hmm. that mantle? Is it going to be Wanderlust and Adidas? Or is it going to, you know what I mean, is it going to be individuals that have had an incredible, deep, profound mm-hmm. experience of mm-hmm. yoga. It's not a thing we do. It's mm-hmm. a state of being.
Yeah. What is it? What is it about yoga that the West loves so much? Because you see a lot of studios saying, like, oh, yoga is... And I understand this is obviously marketed to a larger audience, because a lot of people might initially, if you market it as a very religious, very Hindu practice, I imagine some people might be turned off by that. So I understand kind of why the need to secularize yoga might come. I don't agree with it, but I understand the need for it in a capitalistic society. But why do you think yoga... Because there's no other religious practice as popular and as loved by the West as yoga?
Well, I think, I mean, there's, I mean, I wasn't around in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but there was something exotic about it. And we always like that. You know, I mean, we're drawn to those kinds of things. For me personally, and I alluded to it earlier, I grew up in the Catholic Church with my mom. And by the time I was 12, our parish priest and the one over were both, they both disappeared.
They disappeared?
They were sent away because they were being inappropriate with little boys. So and then they just disappear. So this happened. My mom was aware of it, and I was old enough to like be like, okay. And you could hear the stories about the priest at the summer camp, right? And the summer camp we don't go to anymore. They probably shut down. So like all our institutions got torn down, right? You look behind the curtains and you see real people, and shit gets torn down. So there's a big gap in my life. Like Jesus is incredible. His teaching, like he was nothing but a yoga. Like if he was anything, he was a yoga teacher, right? His message is they're universal. That's why we call them universal messages. So for me, it was familiar, these ideas, like the ideas presented, and the nonviolence and the truthfulness and all these things. And it filled a void, something I was looking for. And it was there. And it, if anything, it brought me, like, I turned back around. I was like, oh, yeah, Jesus was pretty cool. Let's go look at this again as a teacher.
So there's something about yoga and that aspect of Hinduism that is incredibly accessible and offers this kind of like this opportunity for salvation. That sounds very dramatic, but it's true. In a way that's like non-denominational. It's not kind of making you guilty for anything. It's kind of like welcoming you with open arms. And is that's a gap that's maybe like that's like a hole in the West that yoga somehow filled.
Warm and loving and accepting. There was something like, whatever was going on for you, there's a Hindu deity that was going to help you out, that you can pray to. And that's what's the beauty of it. Like, and when you dive into it, you know that they understand that there's only one thing. And there's just different aspects of that divine.
That's an interesting thing a lot of people like get wrong about Hinduism, is they think it's like a polytheistic religion. Like, because there's several gods, it actually means that it's actually monotheistic. It's just different kind of representations or different ways to represent different energies. But they all are, it comes back to like one source. Mm-hmm. Like one creative source.
Brahman.
Exactly, the Brahman.
This was earlier, but I was wondering, as a teacher, and I don't know the yoga community, but I was wondering, since I do think education is the route to change, do you feel like you can't, like, call each other out? Like, do you have people in the yoga community who would do bunny yoga or alcoholic yoga or whatever, but you... Is there a social stigma? Can you feel it within those like communities of yoga teachers? Like, and people are like, yeah, as you said, like the people below the people that might are more edgy.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have at least one friend, like a real friend, who I also enjoy watching on social media channels.
That you said real friend.
Yeah, right.
No, that's in Vancouver, considering how flaky people can be in Vancouver, I like that you said that.
Oh, wow. Shot at Vancouver.
I had a moment. Troy, you had your moment. But he likes to call shit out. And maybe not in the same vein of appropriation, but when he sees something bullshit going on in the yoga community, he's not afraid of calling it out. Probably why he's not teaching at the big studios anymore by choice. Like, I think he opted out of a few places because of the way it was run. So I think it does exist. And I think, you know, I mean, your social justice warriors end up in this realm. You know, I mean, they're going to be there. Personally, I would never go to a beer yoga event. I'm not, and I think the bigger piece of that is the people that I like hanging out with don't run or whatever run. So I'm not exposed to it a lot. By choice.
But have you ever been in a situation, and obviously I don't want you to drop names because that'll destroy.
I did already.
No, I mean, like, any of you, like, people in your close circle, right? Do you ever find them kind of practicing in a way where you're like, oh, that's kind of weird, man. That's a little appropriative. Do you ever find yourself in that position? And if you do you feel comfortable enough to call that person out? Because the
no,
example.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a comfort. I'm coming from a place where, like, we've created a society where everyone's alone, like everyone's isolated, right? And you've got to have everyone's got to have one of everything and be successful and have this many followers and all these things. So I feel really, I don't feel bad for that. I empathize with people's situations, and if they're getting something great out of it, like if it really is medicine for them and they're being better people out in the world, like if because of this weird, you know, bastardized practice that they're going through and they're suddenly shamans, if that is making them better people in the world and raising their kids better, and when my kids see them on the street, they get real genuine smiles and connection, I'm okay with it. I mean, if I was South Asian, I might stand up, you know, I might feel differently. Because the fact is I have Om tattooed on my arm and I say namaste to end yoga classes. So I don't think if we step back and talk about what yoga is and what's possible for a human and for our, then I'm willing to forgive people's mistakes and ignorance. And instead of railing, I think we rail against stuff and we hold up our morality as this, as this weapon. Well, no, morality is personal. Like, just be better in the world. So I try and just, do the best I can and be an example. And if they ask the questions, if I know the answer, offer it. If I don't know the answer, direct them somewhere that is maybe an authority, because I'm not an authority on any of it. So I don't know. I don't think it's my place.
And I like that point you make about just, like, trying to be better people, because, like, even like having these kind of conversations about appropriation, if it's about, even if it's about yoga or something else, maybe First Nation spirituality, whatever it is, I think just having these conversations is important, because I think to a certain extent it's easy to get kind of, like, maybe a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Not defensive, but it's easy to get kind of complacent and maybe not question these things. So I feel like if anything, this keeps people on their feet, right? So yes.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think for our listeners, I mean, we've talked a lot about how yoga is, like, part of a religious practice. Like, I think it would be amazing if you told our listeners about, like, how is it a part of a religious practice? Like, there's, like, these seven paths. And,
you know, I love that, because I was just thinking about that. And there's one of the yamas, Ishvara Pranidhana, is an important part. If you read the Yoga Sutras, pretty quickly they say...
The Patanjali Yoga Sutras?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Pretty early on, so Ishvara Pranidhana is a surrender to God, surrender to the divine, and it's a practice. And pretty early on in the Yoga Sutras, where they outline, it's really the foundation of most of what we do, whether we know it or not, and they... in these 196 sutras, more or less, they mention asana only a few times. But really early on in the first book, he says it many times throughout, and if you can surrender to God, you're good. Go surrender to God and let that guide you, and you're done. So there's a recognition that this, which we call religion, I guess it's turned into religion, is really important. So I am of the belief, and I'm looking forward to being corrected by you more, that it doesn't have to be Hinduism.
But it isn't, though.
That's what I'm saying, is when you come to it, this idea of surrender to God, if you want to take it on, I mean, who's your God? Like, you're
it's
right?
important for me to mention that, like, everything that Hinduism teaches, like, Hinduism as a religion was only coined by the colonizers who came to India. Before that, it was Sanatana Dharma, which is a way of living, right? So even I mean, I use Hinduism now just because, you know, it's like, it's just commonplace. But I do acknowledge that Hinduism it's not something that existed before colonizers came in. It's just a way of life. It's it's like Dharma. It's a way of living.
Yeah, it's a framework to live through.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's a structure.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful. Maybe that's part of it. Is it's so beautiful. I mean, I'm reading the Ramayana right now. I'm waiting. There's this amazing translation by Ashok Banker, this Indian gentleman, and he's sort of serialized it into, like, a Game of Thrones kind of, like, 7 or 8 novels.
It's pretty intense.
It is incredible. And, you know what I mean? It's such a beautiful story. I cry through these novels. I'm on, like, the fourth book. And my wife came up to me last week, and she's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm just, it's so beautiful." The story of Rama. I grew up with superheroes. I got Superman touching my shoulder. Like, Rama's the perfect man.
Yeah, he is, yes.
He's the highest ideal. And it's inspiring, right? And there's nothing gross attached to it. Like, when I think about Jesus in the same kind of way, there's a lot of grossness attached to it for me. But this is clean for me.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring, and I learn so much from it. I'm also reading the Bhagavad Gita. What a wonderful, gift the world. And this is where, like, it's so hard because I get, like, the colonialism was fucking lame. Like, so horrible.
It's a great way
to put it. True.
Oh, God. You know what I mean? Like, you come along, can you imagine if the white guy had shown up and just been like, whoa, you guys got something radical. Like, if they'd come to North America and just stood back for a second and were curious and watched the natives for a while and said, wow, they really got this figured out. Right? Let's do it that way. And honored that. Like, there was, I don't know. But, I mean, that did happen. So it is all screwed up. And I have no problem with people's reaction to that, especially South Asia. Like, you know what I mean? Of course. I mean, African Americans, they were slaves. The First Nations people, they were, I mean, still are slaves. Like, it's horrible. But there's this beauty that comes through. Sure. And when you can get into that, and that's why, like, I will not make apologies for tattooing all my arm, because when you get through to that beauty, you're just better.
You want
to
adorn yourself
people.
With it.
You're just better. Yeah, you want to wear it. And thankfully, there's people around that tell you not to wear it around your butt.
If there's one thing I feel like I've succeeded in my role as producer is telling people not to tattoo home on their butt.
Yes.
That is the overarching message of this year. And I love that you said that about that. It's clean. There's like no like grossness attached to it. Because that brings
for me.
Yeah, and that brings us back to the original point I made about how accessible it is. And maybe that's what the biggest pull is here. It's so accessible. It's something that you can take. And I'm struggling with. Is there a better word than take? But kind of, I don't know, like invite
access.
Yeah, access, yeah. And like modify it in a way that appeals to you. And I think that's what.
I don't know if it appeals to you or speaks to you.
Speaks to you, sure.
Yeah, because
sure.
I mean, you need to. We're teaching people stuff. Like, there's great lessons here. So they have to be able to hear it. So sometimes you've got to speak their language. And I know some studios in Vancouver purposefully don't put deities up and tell the teachers not to om so as not to turn people away. Now, they're coming at it from a profit point of view, probably.
Right.
But
right.
There's also a point of view where, you know, the person that's really freaked out by the oming, I still want them in the yoga classes. How do we get them in? Okay, well, we have a space for them where they're not confronted by that. I mean, whether that's good or bad. And then, it's hard.
It's just what breaks my heart, Peter, is like the past like 40, 50 minutes that I've been talking to you, it's like, it's so clear. Like, if all yoga teachers were like you, I think I wouldn't be having this show right now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but they're not.
That's the thing anyone's ever said to me. Maybe. My wife has said that.
But like that's exactly what my problem is, because like the average person that goes to the average yoga class, that's not necessarily the experience you're going to have. They're not going to have an experience that's contextualized in any way. And I understand that you're limited by the yoga studios you teach at, like the top dogs, the managers or whatever. But all the same, I just feel like this is not the experience of the average person that goes in, and that's to me what's a little problematic.
Sure.
Because it is beautiful, and I feel like people should access all of the beauty, not just like one kind of like. And I've said this word so many times this past hour. Yeah, like one image, kind of image that maybe excludes other people or excludes other people.
I mean, it's this is, I've been thinking about this, and I was hoping I could squeeze it in. I think we got 10 minutes. I mean, these practices, they used to be esoteric. Like, they used to be not accessible and not available, and you had to work really hard. Like, the head of the monastery would leave you outside the gates for 3 days to make sure you really wanted it. And I have stories of my teacher's teacher, Krishnamacharya, not teaching you unless you, this, and this were going on. You mean, like, the yamas and the yamas come first. If you're leading a dishonest life, a violent, dishonest life, where you're greedy, I mean, we're not going to give you yoga. You're not ready for asana. You're not ready for pranayama. You're not ready for these deeper teachings because you're going to abuse them. And there's always, you look back at these books, the cities, the powers that you get through practice. You know what I mean? There's lots of warnings about them because you get this power and you're not ready to wield it properly. You're not Rama.
I'm realizing now as you're talking that a lot of the things that you're saying might make no sense to people who are listening who have no context. Because because like I have a lot of context, so I understand everything Peter's saying. But as he was talking, I was like, are the other three girls in the room? Like, do they know what's happening right now?
When you're talking about,
I was gonna say everyone should just read up on it.
Hit us up. And we'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
These warnings and these checks and balances were there. Because you give the wrong person enough power, and they're going to abuse it. And we're seeing that.
Yeah.
We gave this to everybody because everyone, I mean, it used to not be taught to women. I'm not sure. And the caste system is kind of shitty in the way modern. I mean, the idea behind it is wonderful. Yeah. Everyone's got a part to play in society.
Sure.
But it was abused and used to oppress people.
Yeah.
And they weren't given these teachings. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great now that women get to. You know, and it's kind of fitting that the majority of yogis now are women because they were kept out of it for so long. Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things. There's so many benefits from the widespread teachings now. But there's also a lot of abuse, and more abuse than not. And I mean, that's inevitable. Capitalism is a resource extracting machine. So how do we make money off it? It's inevitable.
Yeah.
So you take the good with the bad, and you get, you get some wonderful, wise beings, hopefully through it, that continue to educate and share.
Why do you think that? Like, there's such a vast lack of representation, specifically in Vancouver, in terms of people who are actually teaching yoga. Speaking of, like, what you said about women teaching and that kind of thing, in terms of, like, racial representation, because when, Lakshmi, you were looking for yoga teachers in Vancouver, you had a lot of trouble finding people.
When I was thinking about the show, I thought, oh, it might be cool to have, like, a yoga teacher who's a person of color and just kind of, you know, ask them about what it's like being a yoga teacher in a really white industry. Mm-hmm. And I had the hardest time. And I was like, you know what? You know, I know this really cool dude on my Instagram. I'm just gonna like hit him up and see if he's willing to come.
I'm glad you did. I wonder if it has something to do with what you, I mean, you were saying earlier. And I've heard this from Indian friends and many times. Is that for you? Like, yoga's done at home with the family,
right?
So it's not something that you do out in public, and it's not something that you make money off of. It's your way of life, so you just wouldn't consider it. And maybe people of color have a stronger connection to their own culture, so they're not out there appropriating other people's cultures. There, you know what I mean?
That could be true.
So I think there's more at play here than the whitewashing, while that does exist. But I think there's a whole lot of innocent ignorance within a like hard shell of capitalism that's loud.
Yes.
And pays for followers on Instagram.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, of course, it's and the algorithm shows the... I mean, and there's dudes out there, you know what I mean? Like, it's... it's not easy.
Yeah.
So how do you think, Lakshmi, and also feel free to chime in, how do you think, for our listeners, people can go about respectfully practicing yoga if they so... please, like, they want to get involved, maybe they think the cultural aspect of it is beautiful, like, what can people do when this isn't their own culture?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to, like, educate yourself and contextualize your practice. So if you are going to practice something that's not your own, like, you should definitely feel free to do it. That's the greatest thing about yoga. But just contextualize your practice. Like, know what you're doing. Like, understand the meaning behind it. Say you're doing this only for, like, the physical effects, right? Understand the context of it. And then if you choose to just do it only, like, if you don't want to kind of go beyond the physical aspect of yoga, that is your choice. But understand it, contextualize it, understand the words, the mantras, the meaning of everything you're doing, the meaning of the poses that you're doing. And most of all, I think yoga is here to be appreciated, not appropriated. And if you keep that in your mind when you're practicing it, then I think it can be something really beautiful. What do you think, Peter?
For me, a big part of yoga is inquiry. I mean, I'm a student. I'm trying to learn about myself and self-realization. So constantly asking why.
Do you know anything about Ramana Maharshi?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We can talk about this later. Okay.
I'm not to rush out. But ask why. Why? And so you chant and you say why, or you do this and you say why, and then you search the answer out. Ask the teacher. Teacher doesn't know. Hopefully, good teacher will say, I don't know, but my teacher might, or this or this or this, and in that way you're going to uncover the gems. Like, you're going to scratch this. You scratch deeper than the surface and go deeper and get higher and encounter this stuff. Because it's right there. It's right here. Right here, right now. You just gotta earnestly look for it.
Yeah.
Keep asking why. They don't understand why.
Ask
authorities, not Instagram stars.
And I think your question also goes back to the fact that, like, a lot of people are just, they're so busy with their lives. They just want to kind of just, like, pop in, pop out, just do this thing because they've heard that it's, like, you know, it's good for you. It's, like, it's slow stretching. It's supposed to be relaxing. I think a lot of people just, it's not that maybe they don't want to learn. They just want to kind of, like, it's just, you know.
Or they don't know.
Yeah. They're too busy.
Until an hour ago.
Yeah, true.
So
you didn't what?
I didn't know that yoga was part of a religion. I had to ask you before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, you go for an hour, and you stretch and you breathe deep and mm-hmm. you have a little nap at the end and you leave feeling great. Mm-hmm. I want those kind of people in the world. Mm-hmm. So yes, everybody mm-hmm. go to a yoga class. Mm-hmm. Very few of us should probably teach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, and it's this weird thing where like these high overheads for these yoga spaces, the way they make money is by doing yoga teacher trainings. So everyone's doing yoga teacher training.
Yeah, that's and super common.
It's super common. So that everyone's walking around the yoga, and it's a wonderful way to deepen your practice. Mm-hmm. Do a yoga teacher training. Mm-hmm. Everyone do a yoga teacher training. Mm-hmm. Just don't teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're called to. I don't know. Don't listen to me. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And whatever you have the time for. I mean, we want better people in the world. We need better people in the world. We need people that are gonna walk down the street with a little bounce in their step, make eye contact to you with a smile, mm-hmm. And be nice to your kids. Mm-hmm. You mean and old people, mm-hmm. and when I come out of my yoga practice, I'm mm-hmm. that's who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm a really nice person.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag modest. No, that's true. You are, but I mean, like, even with the yoga teacher training, like it's yoga classes are pretty expensive too. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like I'd love to see more like accessible yoga classes for students.
Disrupt. There's a wonderful yoga studio, One Yoga for the People, mm-hmm. in Gastown, mm-hmm. and it's by donation, and they really mean it. I worked there for years. I teach mm-hmm. there now. Mm-hmm. You walk in, you have no money, you have a toonie, you get to go to yoga class.
Yeah.
For students, for youth. Whoa. Yeah, for youth, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be, I think
it
still is.
Mm-hmm.
By donation. And it really means by donation. And there's Karma Teachers is also mm-hmm. down in Gastown, another thing. Mm-hmm. It's accessible. Mm-hmm. You can go.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, there's a huge disruption we need. I'm about to convert my garage into a yoga studio.
I thought you were going to say, I'm about to convert.
No. A long time ago. My garage into a yoga studio. And mm-hmm. so I need to, like, people in my hood, on my mm-hmm. street, on my block, in my neighborhood, I'm gonna be there to offer this.
Wow.
And it's not a big business. I'm not mm-hmm. gonna. You mean I want to make it cheap, mm-hmm. inexpensive. And people keep telling me that I gotta charge $20 to $25 for a drop in. I'm like, no, that's kind mm-hmm. of the point. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it'd be a service to community. Like this kind of mm-hmm. disruption mm-hmm. in the industry.
Right.
And in the way it's run as a business, in the mm-hmm. way it's taught, in the way it's approached, in the way it's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's important.
Yeah, and you know a point I didn't get earlier, I want to squeeze it in real quick, is we were talking about how like people who are from that community or that practice often don't become yoga teachers. It's mostly because I think it's like a very, at least in my family, like if I told my parents, like, Mom, I want to be a yoga teacher, she'd be like, and what? Like what? Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean you want to be a yoga teacher? That's not a profession.
Yeah, you're a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah.
Or you're something.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And there's, again, we've lost the tradition, like, there's the appropriation and all these horrible things culturally, but we've lost it, like the way this works best. Every community used to have a guru, a teacher, and the community would take care of them,
mm-hmm.
put a roof over their head and feed them and give them the meager stuff that they needed because they're yogis and they don't need much.
Mm-hmm.
They'd take care of them and they'd honor them,
mm-hmm.
and they'd listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone was a yoga. I mean, everyone's a yoga teacher all the time. My kids are yoga teachers. Like, I get there's that to it, but no, and that's his or her job, their job. Is to hold these teachings and share them
mm-hmm.
constantly
mm-hmm.
with the community, the neighborhood,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And now I gotta make money off it, so yeah, I'm gonna compromise. I'm not gonna.
Right.
I'm gonna let this go out. I'm gonna whitewash this so that more people come,
yeah.
so that I can make
yeah.
more money.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have 3 minutes left on the show, and I mean, the goal was never to find a solution for this. It was just to mm-hmm. kind of like air out the dirty laundry, so yeah. to speak, and just have a conversation.
Did we get that? Did we do that?
I think we did. We definitely aired out some dirty laundry.
Nothing left unsaid? No more yelling to the void?
To yell into the void one more time, though, mm-hmm. I feel like the UBC Yoga Club, if they're going to use an OM symbol as the B in UBC, they should say something somewhere on the page about the origins of yoga, because there was literally nothing, like no information
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
about anything. So.
As a service, like you mean, as if you're teaching yoga, then yeah,
yeah.
Use it. It's a teaching tool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. That's all I want to say.
I'll second that.
Just call them out, UBC Yoga Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, put a disclaimer. Get some education on there.
Come
yeah.
find us.
Thank you so much, Lakshmi and Peter, for schooling us today.
Yeah.
I feel
like I have
humbled.
Learned.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us today.
Yeah, no, I love talking about this stuff. I learn. Mm-hmm. This teaching is how I learn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So This is it. This is the last episode. This is weird. Yeah, thank you. Thank you all for listening and being part of the ride. And thank you to all the collective volunteers. And I'm so happy we were able to end. I was able to end my term as a producer talking about this. Mm-hmm. Any final words? This is incredible. I hate saying goodbyes. This is dramatic.
Yeah.
Any final words, everyone?
Well, we were going to name this episode Namaste in Ben.
Still under discussion.
That's not a good ending, though. Thank you, guys.
All right. This is Lakshmi.
Peter.
Lily.
Chimgi.
Anastasia.
Signing off for now. Be kind to each and be kind to one another, everyone. All right. Have a good evening. And this is Lakshmi signing off for the last time. Bye.